Well, we certainly hear a lot more about literacy and illiteracy today, and the Literacy Volunteers, that's a national group, isn't it?
Right. Literacy Volunteers of America is a national group. I'm executive director of Literacy Volunteers of New York City.
You break it down into chapters?
Literacy Volunteers of New York City is an affiliate of LVA, and it's a very loose affiliation for us. So for us to go into LVA versus LVNYC.
Well, what does the Literacy Volunteers seek to do?
Literacy Volunteers does a number of things. Our main mission, of course, is to help adults learn to read and write. And we train volunteers so that they can teach adults who want to learn to read. But our new project that we're working on is a line of books to help adults who want to learn to read. The unfortunate thing that happens, Don, is that when an adult wants to learn to read, they find that there are very few good reading materials out there. So here they're all prepped to learn to read, and they don't really have good things to read. What's out there is often more intended either for immigrants or refugees or high school kids on the verge of dropping out or people with drug problems. So what we decided to do was to put out our own books, and we have two types of books that we're bringing out.
Well, before we go into that, I just wonder if we can go back and kind of be chronological about this.
Sure.
And work up to it, because I think, first of all, we probably ought to talk about how severe the problem is in terms of literacy.
Quite severe. People don't realize how severe it is. And you can hear all sorts of statistics, whether you choose the more conservative ones or the wider definition of literacy. It's quite shocking. In New York City alone, there are over 1 million adults with reading problems. And nationally, the figure is way over 20 million.
Are we talking about reading problems with regard to English?
These are primarily people who can't read and write in English and who grew up in this country. But another interesting statistic is that the pool of adult illiterates grows each year by over 2 million. And over half of that pool, over 1 million people, are simply kids who have reached the age of 18 and are out of school and haven't learned to read and write. Either they dropped out or they were pushed through the school systems.
How is this possible to grow up illiterate in the United States?
Well, it's a funny thing, this wonderful country of ours, where there is so much opportunity. Yet on the other hand, I don't think that we as a nation, we as a people, really respect education. Education is a very low priority in this country. You can see it in the lack of respect teachers receive, and in the low pay, and in the condition in which many of our students attend schools, where, for example, here in New York City, where the buildings are literally crumbling. And when you don't have a high value for education, I think that enables many more people to slip through the cracks.
How do they slip through the cracks?
It happens. We have numerous students who have high school diplomas, and they are seeking help from us in how to read and write. In fact, over half of our students attended at least 6 years of school. Some of them have special needs in terms of learning problems, but many of them simply were unable to get what they needed in the schools.
How can these people get through life? I mean, how do they find, how can they read highway signs, or pass a test for a driver's license, or any of those things? How in the world can they get by?
Well, Don, you're mentioning the very things that make life difficult for these people. People who don't know how to read and write, or don't know how to read and write well, have many mechanisms they develop so that they can get through the day. I know one young woman, for example, who probably reads at around the second grade level. She carries a briefcase with her wherever she goes. She always carries the New York Times under her arm. She's dressed impeccably. So were you to see her, you would think that she has literacy skills, which would enable her to read the newspaper, but she doesn't. And she has learned how to appear that she can read and write, and this gives her the confidence to make it through the day. I know other students of ours who have told me stories that when they apply for a job, for example, they'll either say, oh, I left my glasses in the car and I can't read this, or I have all this information at home, can I take the job application home? And then they get either a spouse or a friend to help them fill out the job application form.
Well, this young woman with the briefcase, she goes into D'Agostino's to buy groceries. How does she know what to buy?
Well, you can hear the really terrible story at one end of someone who will buy Crisco thinking that they're buying a container of chicken, because the photograph of the chicken is on the container. But what really happens more often on a day-to-day level is that these people can't do comparative shopping. Obviously, people with reading problems are going to be at the lower end of the economic scale and not have the higher-paying jobs. Not always, but usually. So here are people that most need to watch how they're spending their money, but they can't do comparative shopping because they can only purchase things where they recognize the label.
Now, the literacy volunteers, do these people seek you out, or do you try to locate them?
Both ways. It's terrific you're doing this show because this will result in people seeking us out. But we work with social service agencies throughout the city, and there's a lot of word of mouth. We've been around for 15 years. So there are many people in the community that have heard of us that way.
All right. So you have someone who cannot read and write. What do you do? How do you teach an adult? You know, in teaching children, of course, it's a very slow process that starts with A and B on blocks and things like that, even before they go to school. But here you have an adult in the 20s or 30s. What do you do? What sort of effort do you make?
Well, the young child who learns to read and write is at an advantage over an adult who's learning to read and write, because they start reading and writing without negative feelings or unreal expectations. When you have an adult who's learning how to read and write, their self-esteem is often very low. Their sense of themselves as a learner is very, very low. They believe often that they won't be capable of learning to read or to write. In fact, some of them think, well, maybe one day I can read, but certainly I'll never be able to learn to write. It's such an active skill. But what happens is they come to us, and we help them understand that they can learn to read and write just like anyone else. We ask them what they are interested in. They tell us maybe they want to advance themselves on the job. Maybe they want to simply enjoy reading generally. Maybe they want to read bedtime stories to their grandchildren. Whatever they want to do, we help them attain their goal, so that you will find students doing everything from reading a paint chip chart, if someone is a painter, to reading bedtime stories, to reading opera librettos, to reading a driver's license manual.
Of course, once they learn to read one element of the things they're interested in, they can apply it to others, can't they?
Exactly.
It must be take a certain degree of courage for someone to approach you and say, look, I'm illiterate, I need help. Almost like going into Alcoholics Anonymous.
I agree with you very much. In fact, while illiteracy, I want to emphasize, is in no way a disease, I don't think that your analogy is off the mark at all, because what happens is that these people have gone through life with a secret and a problem, and they think they're the only one. They don't know that there are over 20 million adults out there just in this country who share their disadvantage in terms of reading. And what happens is when literacy students find each other, they sit and they talk and they talk and they talk. And that exchange is so important because it helps them gain self-confidence so that they can then be better students.
Now, how does the program work physically? Do you have classrooms, or is it tutoring at their homes?
We are very lucky in that corporations such as New York Life, Gulf and Western, McGraw-Hill, The Equitable, donate cafeteria space in the evening. And our students and tutors go there, and they're under the supervision of our staff professionals. And that's where the tutoring takes place. We do tutoring in small groups of about 3 to 5 students.
Do the students have to pay?
No, they don't.
So how do you fund the literacy volunteers?
Through the generosity of people such as your listeners. We get most of our money, in fact, from individuals. We have fundraising events. We receive money from foundations, corporations. We get some money from the government. But we receive much more money from the corporate sector and from private individuals than we do from the government.
Is there a long way to go? Should the literacy volunteers be expanded?
Oh, definitely, definitely. We only serve 900 students a year in our program. Obviously, we serve many more students through our books, but there is a great need for this country from all segments, from the government, from private individuals, schools, church groups, need to come forward and help address the illiteracy problem.
Now, you're talking about literacy volunteers. Exactly who are the volunteers in your group?
They're everyone. They're everyone from a 25-year-old out-of-work actor to a 69-year-old retired lawyer to a secretary to lots of people in publishing are volunteers in our program. I would say about 20% of our volunteers are in publishing, but they run the whole gamut.
Well, what if someone like myself were to volunteer and there's a group of students in the Gulf and Western cafeteria? What do I know about teaching? Are there guidelines that you established?
Well, you know quite a bit because you've gone through our tutor training. What we do is we provide volunteers with 27 hours of training, and prior to providing them with this month-long training, we do an extensive screening so that people won't waste their times and prepare to become a volunteer if, in fact, they're not really fit for that job. Unfortunately, some people out there think that anyone can tutor. Well, it is a skill, and we take very seriously the fact that our students want to learn to read and write, and it's very important to provide them with volunteers who have a good bent toward teaching.
Well, I hope you don't get a volunteer like Miss Kiley, the senior English teacher I had back in high school, who, on the last day of class, she went around and said, "Everybody, tell us what you're going to do after school." So everybody, "I'm going to Princeton, I'm going to do this," and they came to me and I said, "I'm going to college in Ohio," and Miss Kiley said, "Swain, you're going to college? I didn't think you were smart enough." So, I love Miss Kiley, she was great. Well, this brings us up to New Writers' Voices. This is a project of the Literacy Volunteers of New York. Tell me what, this is a series of books. Tell me about these books and what are they designed to do?
Well, we're very excited about New Writers' Voices because we're publishing works by adult literacy students. We have the first book out in that series called Speaking Out on Health, and the story of how it came about is rather interesting. We went to students within our program and we said, "What would you like to write about which you would like other literacy students to read?" And through this extensive survey, the students decided that they wanted to write about health-related issues. So what we have here, Don, are articles on everything from how I dealt with TB, how I dealt with depression, how I dealt with an injury on the job with cerebral palsy, and how my, in some cases, how my illiteracy problem affected how I dealt with this issue. We have other books coming out in the New Writers' Voices series on family, another one on home.
Written by the students.
Written by literacy students. We have a couple of single author books written by students also.
Now, where are these books available? How does one get them?
They can be obtained through Literacy Volunteers New York City.
But they're aimed at other students.
Right, right. They're available nationally. We have a whole marketing plan. We're alerting colleges, prisons, libraries, high schools, other literacy programs, English as a second language programs about the books.
Now, the books, of course, are not all written by students. There's
right.
Bill Cosby and Avery Corman and Louise Edrick and Carol Burnett. Tell me about that. So you have a kind of a second line here, right?
Exactly. Right. Writers' voices. We thought not only would literacy students like to read works by other literacy students, but they would like to also finally have the opportunity to read works by prominent authors and prominent Americans such as Bill Cosby and Carol Burnett, who also have books out. And we've been very fortunate. The authors you've named have been most generous in making excerpts from their works available. And what we've done is frame them in such a way that they are more accessible to adult literacy students. We have a lot of white space on the page. The type is larger than what one would normally find in a book. And the excerpts are short enough so that they aren't too daunting for literacy students.
What about the text itself? Is that altered at all?
No. We consciously decided we did not want to alter the text. So that at one end, if you have students who don't know how to read at all, the text can be used with the teacher reading the material to the student. If the student is at the third, fourth, or fifth grade reading level or above, they can grapple with the material themselves, either in consort with a teacher or tutor or independently.
Did you say these books would be made available to prison libraries?
Right.
So anybody having a difficulty in reading can find these little books. They're small paperback books that are aimed at their specific problems.
Right. And while your readers can't see the books, they can only hear our voices, I think it's significant to mention how the books look. We were very fortunate in working with Paul Davis Studios. We specifically wanted to work with Paul Davis because his work is very adult in nature. And one of the complaints which we hear from our students is that books produced for literacy students look like children's books, and they're embarrassed to carry them in public. They're embarrassed to have them out in their homes. And these books look like books that anyone would read. In fact, I think they look like very special books, even more special than the typical mass market paperback that one would find in a bookstore.
Now, somebody hearing our conversation right now might say, hey, I'd like to, I may not want to join the project, maybe I'm a little more advanced than that, but I'm still having reading problems. Can they go to Literacy Volunteers and request these books? How does it work?
Sure. They can either call us at 212-475-5757, or they could certainly write us at Literacy Volunteers, 666 Broadway, Suite 520, New York, New York, 10012, and we would be more than happy to send them a catalog.
Is your office a place where people can drop in?
No.
So they should call
first.
On a national level, what is the federal government doing to encourage the fight against illiteracy?
Well, Mrs. Bush, I would like to point out, has been most helpful in supporting the whole literacy effort. In fact, we're having a fundraising event where she will be speaking. And she, in a very substantive way, I should say, is supporting literacy programs and helping us obtain private support. Unfortunately, there is, in my view, there is not sufficient federal dollars which are made available for literacy programs. I don't think that the federal government is sufficiently forthcoming in funding for the programs. I think that there needs to be a good balance between corporate support, government support, and individual support, and I don't think yet that we've fully seen the support at the federal level which this issue deserves.
Well, we'll wait till the crisis dies down in Panama. When that's over, maybe we can spend more time on literacy. Well, it's a wonderful thing that you're doing, and I hope this series is beneficial to the people that it's aimed at helping. It's a really wonderful thing. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.